Your introduction is amazing, and I always find people that have as good of backgrounds as you have, it's always better to have them introduced, because if I introduce you, it's just kind of long and sort of awkward. But if you do it, you can tell me the good stuff and skip the crappy stuff. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host for the big episode today. Call me Sean. Sean Connery. That's not my name, but you can call me that. I mean, that'd be fine. No, it's Todd Conklin. I'm trying to trick you. Is it working? Welcome back, you guys. Hope everything's going groovy. It is nutty out there. Nutty, I tell you. Crazy. There's so much going on. Spring is appearing. We've had such good feedback on the podcast. Life's getting better. All this stuff I'm thinking about and writing the fatality book is just about out. I'll keep you in the loop when that comes out. I'm getting a lot of attention on that. If you haven't followed, or if you're just listening to the podcast for the first time, welcome. Ask your friends. It's fine. It's a pretty open conversation. We don't really have a lot of rules. It usually starts with me doing some kind of goofy introduction, then a conversation with people, then I tell you to be safe and it's over. And then you can listen to something else in the car. That's pretty much how it works. But if you're just joining us, I've been thinking a lot about fatality and serious injury prevention. Or at least that's kind of what people call it, SIF or FSI, or they got all sorts of names for it. And out of it, I looked at a whole bunch of them last year and this year. Out of it came a new book, and the new book is pretty, it's not the same old grud. It's definitely out there saying that if you just do the same stuff harder, or I'll cut to the chase. I think we bias prevention over control. And because we bias prevention, we believe that if we take care of all the little tiny things and continually prevent, we'll never have a fatality. And the problem is that's not how it works. Fatalities are outliers. Think statistical anomaly. Don't think failed safety program. Enough on that. Anyway, that book's coming out. Lots of attention on it. I'll be the first to tell you about it, where you can get it and how you can get it and what you can do and read and comment and like it or hate it or whatever the case. But that's neither here nor there. Today, we're going to talk to Mike Blevins, who is I don't even know how to describe Mike other than one of the greatest human beings that ever walked the earth, who also happens to be chief nuclear officer or was chief nuclear officer for years for Luminant, Texas Utility Guys. He's done everything and been everywhere. And you know, if you're a CNO, there's like three of them in the world. I mean, well, there's probably more than that. I was making that up because drama, you know, good stories only happen to people who can tell good stories. But there aren't very many of them in the world, and Mike is one of them, and he's a great one. He's going to talk to us just about his philosophy, but what he's really going to talk to us about is the HPRCT meeting that's coming up in June. I think it's like the 11th, 12th, and 13th of June in Toronto. If you want to go, just look up HPRCT and please come. I mean, more the merrier. And it is in a great – Toronto's fun anyway, but it's a great meeting. Decker's going to be there this year. I guess I'm coming because, you know, I'm Decker's coffee getter and driver. And this Mike Blevins guy will be there. There's going to be a good crowd of people. It's always a good time. Mike's going to talk to us a little bit about his philosophy. I don't know what to say other than – he just hits me where I live. He basically has three things he thinks about. One is being present, which that's money in the bank. Two is understanding that people are the most important resource. And three is what you really manage is trust and confidence. That's about as good as it gets. Let me not talk much more and just kind of put Mike on the horn. Let's listen into this conversation Mike and I had on a Thursday morning in the middle of March, talking about life, love, and HPRCT.
My name is Mike Blevins, and I was born and raised in the utility business. almost literally. I worked for the same company for 40 years and actually still have a business relationship with them. So I'm actually going on my 48th year with the company, which most people know as TXU. Some of the old timers might know it as Texas Utilities. Some of the new names are Luminant or Energy Future Holdings. And today called Vistra is the holding company. Luminant is still it. But I started literally my first summer out of high school as an engineering summer intern, worked five summers as an intern, and then had the privilege of, after I graduated from University of Texas at Arlington with an electrical engineering degree, I got to work in distribution, transmission, gas-fired plants, coal-fired plants, and then spent 30 years in nuclear plant, and then a couple of years in the corporate organization, and retired as the chief operating officer. In the company, they sort of knew me as the nuclear guy, because I had been one of the long-timers that had worked mostly nuclear, and I had the privilege of spending about 6 years as the chief nuclear officer for TXU Energy Future Holdings. I'm married to my high school sweetheart. We are going to be celebrating our 45th wedding anniversary this June. And I have two sons grown and married, and each of them have two children. So I have four grandchildren. And they all live in the same town that I do, literally 10 minutes in each direction. And we have the swimming pool, so we're blessed with getting to see our grandchildren, children, and daughters-in-laws quite frequently. I've been retired for about 7 years now, which is hard to believe. But I've been having fun since then. I don't have any of those really time-consuming hobbies like hunting, fishing, golfing, any of those sorts of things. So I still do a little bit of work. It's fun. And work just a few days a month. Working with people that I know and like, and do some things that they call coaching. It doesn't feel like it when I'm doing it, but they call it coaching and a little bit of leadership development. I've gotten certified in a few things that I was very interested in work and just didn't have the time to focus on them then. And in retirement, I've been able to get certified in some human performance things and leadership things and psychological things. And basically, I enjoy having fun with other people's brains. So just a little bit about me.
That's a great introduction. As long as you enjoy having fun with other people's brains for good, not for evil, I'm totally behind it 100%. So, Mike,
it's mostly for good, but you have to ask them, actually.
Yeah, you have to get the feedback from them. So you're one of the what would I call you guys? You're one of the. I want to be really respectful, so I'm choosing these words carefully. You're one of the dinosaurs in the industry, but I mean that in the positive use of the word dinosaur, not in the negative use of the word dinosaur, if such a thing exists. Walk us through, because a bunch of people that listen to this podcast aren't going to know, but walk us through what a chief nuke officer does for a power plant, because that's actually quite a enormous responsibility, and there's a lot of things going on around that. Just talk to me about that was kind of a super important job for you, and that's really where you cut your teeth, both locally at your utility, but nationally and globally in the utility industry.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a fun job, and it is very unique. I mean, for instance, in the United States today, there are probably about 25 nuclear officers, and there may be 100 or so worldwide. So there are not a lot of people that have that job that are chief nuclear officers or CNOs in short terms for operating commercial nuclear power plants. That's plants that make electricity using nuclear fuel. And the chief nuclear officer is the senior officer in a company, and it can be some nuclear plants are their own company, so some serve the role of CEO and CEO. But most of the CNOs work for some portion of a larger corporation, typically an electric utility company, and have all the responsibility for primarily the safe operation of the plant, but also for actually making electricity and hopefully making a little bit of money doing it. So in my journey to chief nuclear officer, I spent literally started out as a first line engineering supervisor and worked through many jobs. I like to tell people I had 17 jobs in the nuclear plant, and they never did figure out what I could do. And so I just sort of kept getting promoted and was responsible for various departments and then worked my way to plant manager, then site vice president, chief nuclear officer. So the chief nuclear officer, and whatever responsibility for the day-to-day operations of the plant, for the engineering and support that's required to do that, for long-term modifications and improvements to the plant, for regulatory compliance with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, for environmental compliance with the EPA. And then there are a lot of very important support functions that go around that, training people to operate the power plant, training maintenance and technicians and technical people, training engineers and chemists and other scientists to support the operation. A typical nuclear power plant of two units might have about 1,000 to 1,500 people working in it. So I got to work with a lot of good people, and they were all really smart. And one of the things I used to tell people is that I really enjoy working with high technology and really smart people, and I got to do both of those nuclear power. So the chief nuclear officer is sort of the focal point for the nuclear power plants that are within a company, and then that would be contrasted against coal plants and other power plants that might be making electricity within a particular company. It's very unusual in that the CNOs actually do a lot of work with each other, because the nuclear industry is quite unique in that there's a high degree of collaboration, particularly around safety, for plants in the United States and across the world.
So what you learn, what is a job like that teach you? Because I know you teach a lot, but what did it teach you?
To rely on people. You know, many companies have their part of their logo or their history, maybe even some signage that's still around that says something to the effect of people are our most important asset. And it's sort of interesting. I have a little bit of fun when I do some leadership training, when I say, let's get to know each other. And I ask people, okay, how many of you have engineering degrees? How many of you have science degrees? How many of you have math and physics and all these other things? Then I usually get some IT people in there and some, you know, some business degrees and some other things. And I say, well, how many of you have a people degree? Usually there's definitely silence. On occasion, an HR person will raise their hand and say, well, I have a degree in human resources, which is a digression, but I would argue it's not a people degree for the most part. It's a process degree. And so then I ask them, okay, what's the most important asset in your company? And almost to a person, everybody will say people. And I say, how much time has your company spent training you about people? And usually silence again, but it's usually pretty small. And then I say, well, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about how people work. And so one of my huge realizations is that, you know, the technology and equipment and engineering and all that sort of fun, but it's really the people that make it work. And you, in order to be successful, you really have to learn to work with and rely on people, trust people to get the job done and help us all grow in the process.
So Mike, tell me about this balance between the technology and the people, because I think this people degree question is a really interesting question, because our industries, if you're in medical, if you're in aviation, if you're in high performance computing, definitely if you're in utilities or power, we tend to sort of prefer the technical degrees. I mean, you know, that we pay them more, we are nicer to them, we recruit them more aggressively. And yet you're telling me the people side of this is really the most important asset and probably the biggest leverage you have as a leader. So hit me with your philosophy on that.
Right. Well, in nuclear power plants, and I assume the same thing would apply in really high technology businesses like airlines and medical and many others, but certainly in nuclear power, as you say, we do hire engineers, scientists, you know, technical people. We train operators and maintenance folks to be very technical. And we think we'll give them a little bit of leadership training along the way, and that'll be good enough. And as you work in a singular function within the nuclear power plant, though, you probably, your technical skills are what get you by, perhaps even what make you successful. And as you move up in the organization and have more and more topics to deal with, I think the better you have to get at managing people. In fact, one of my intrigues along my journey was at some point they started referring to me as I would go to leadership training as a general manager. And I thought, well, I don't know exactly what that means, but what it really meant to me was I was managing a whole lot of subjects that I really didn't know anything about. Now I got a senior reactor operator certification, and so I understood nuclear power plants. I had an engineering degree, so I understood, I thought, equipment. But then I started getting all these other things called radiation protection and environmental and human resources and, oh my goodness, accounting and finance and regulatory affairs, and lawyers entered my life. And so I figured somewhere in there pretty quickly, I'm either not smart enough or I certainly don't know enough to be able to intelligence my way through these discussions. So I've got to learn to rely on people. And one of my joys in my career was learning about the job, my job, from other people, by learning what they did, how they did it, how I could support them. Because I genuinely believe that leadership is really there just to support the people that really do the work. And if we're not helping make their job better, more effective, more efficient, more reliable, whatever measure we're going for, then we're just wasting the company's money. And so this concept of people, really at a very early phase in my career, became quite important to me. And I found that the more that I relied on people, the more that I trusted them to do their job, the better they did, the happier they were, the more they did. And sort of this self-fulfilling prophecy about getting the most out of people. And I wasn't being a manipulator. It was actually good for me. And so I learned that, hey, if you can really work with these folks, help them get excited about their job, they'll help you be successful and help you do your job. Now, in nuclear power, you have to understand the technology. It's one of those jobs that you can't just sort of come in, particularly at the top, and say, okay, I'm the new chief nuclear officer, and here's how we're going to run this place. It's high enough technology that you really do actually have to understand how the thing runs. And a lot of the background and requirements and legal requirements and regulatory requirements and all those sorts of things. But in the end, it's the people that do it. Chief nuclear officer, I didn't make a kilowatt hour on my own the whole time I was there. And it takes all these people to do that.
After years of experience, trial and error, good stories and bad stories, what is it that you think it boils down to in leading a highly reliable organization? What should we be really all doing better?
I think understanding the environment that we're working in is really important. So one of the things that I would tell people in leadership is that one of the most important things for them to do themselves is to know themselves, because it's really hard for you to know how you're impacting your organization if you don't even know yourself. So I think self-awareness is critical for a successful leader. Then learning some of the same things about the people you work with. You know, what do they like? What don't they like? What motivates them? What demotivates them? What makes them mad? What makes them happy? Because if, another question I like to ask is, who produces more, a happy employee or an unhappy employee? Well, the universal answer is a happy employee. Of course, there's a lot of science that backs all that up. And I said, well, why is it that companies do so much to make employees unhappy then? It's almost a tenet of business that seems at times to make it more difficult for employees to do their job. So learning the people that you work with, I think, is very important, and then learning the spirit of collaboration.
You've been a part of HPRCT a good long while, and HPRCT is coming up. In fact, I think one of the reasons you and I are talking is because Charles wants you and I to talk about HPRC, so we shouldn't miss the chance to do that. What does HPRC offer, and why should people be interested in going this year? It looks like this year's going to be kind of a fun one. It's definitely exotic.
I think it's going to be a good one. One, for one thing, it's in a good location, Toronto. And we want to thank OPG and Bruce Power for being the key sponsors in this particular conference. It's going to be in June. And it's a conference that's actually been running for more than 20 years now. And Jack Martin, who was one of the principals in HPRCT for a long time, tells me that I was the manager that wrote the check for the first one that we did in Dallas. It started out as a utility cooperative between a few utilities that were just interested in human performance, root cause, and trending. So thus the fancy name HPRCT. And it's one of the true survivors in the nuclear industry, certainly. A number of years ago, it broadened out to more than nuclear. So we have a wide range of professionals that attend the conference. Nuclear power, fossil power generation, transportation, medical, airlines, and then a lot of other industries that are supporting those, and a lot of really smart consultants and advisors that work in the business. And there's about 200 people that'll probably be there. And so we have a bunch of general sessions, a lot of breakout sessions, and then there's even a training day opportunity for people that either want to get beginning skills in things like human performance or advanced skills in root cause analysis. And I understand there's going to be a couple of really smart people there this year. You being one of them. Sydney Decker is going to be one of our special guests this year on Wednesday. And he's going to talk to us two or three different times and going to have an opportunity to have some question and answer. Mr. Decker is one of those guys that's really looked to as an authority in particularly in the human performance business. Also in the broader perspective of root cause and trending. So we're going to get to learn a little bit about just culture from the guy that wrote the book, and a little bit about human performance and human error reduction from a guy that wrote the field guide on the human error reduction. So we're really, really got a special conference going this year. It's 3 days plus a fourth day of training, and there's also an opportunity to visit the Darlington Nuclear Power Plant for those that want to, hosted by Ontario Power.
Perfect. And it's always fun. You're right, Mike. It's an organization that's really, in the last couple of years, it's always been a good meeting. I mean, we're starting in a good place no matter where we start, but the last couple of years it's expanded sort of beyond its original kind of scope. And I think the expansion, adding different industries and different people, really made that meeting and that organization lots richer. They're way better for sort of being inclusive and bringing people in, that's for sure.
And go ahead.
Will they get a chance to meet with you? Can they actually come and see you, sit at the foot of you and ask hard questions?
Well, I may be sitting at their feet, but... yes, I plan to be there, and we're going to be doing one executive panel, which I'll be moderating, where we're going to be inviting some executive and leaders from the industry for the crowd to be able to talk to, and I'll be participating as part of that. But yes, I'll also be there. Yeah, back to your comment earlier, you brought us back to people several times. One of the things that we knew and have discovered firsthand is that, people are common to all these high reliability organizations. And so it's interesting to hear stories from transportation and airlines and the medical profession about their, pitfalls and where they're struggling to get the best out of people and how to reduce errors. And the stories have different players in them. But most of the basis for them is still the same, and that's people.
And that's very cool. That is very cool. So if you gave one piece of advice, Mike, one piece of advice, I'm going to steal every nugget I can steal from me before I get finished with this. One piece of advice, what would it be?
Well, you know, when you retire, you get asked a lot of really dumb questions. Some of them are actually very good. And one of the ones that sort of people say, what's your favorite thing about retirement? Well, I've sort of developed three answers. One is turning off the alarm clock. Two is not worrying about midnight phone calls. Because, you know, in the electric power business, people are kind of funny. They like their electricity 24 hours a day. And when it's not working, somebody calls you. But the third for me was enjoying to learn the presence. I find it interesting that most leaders tend to live in the future, and it carries over into everything we do, so that even when we're sitting at home with our family on a Saturday morning watching cartoons, our minds may be adrift of thinking about next week's meetings or next month's budget session or next year's strategy plan. And so we tend to live our lives that way. And in retirement, I've sort of learned to think, oh, I need to get up. No, I really don't have to get up. No, I can stay here with my grandkids and I can just watch them play. So learning to enjoy the presence, I think, is one of the things that's really a struggle in the workplace and would help people's level of satisfaction if we got better at paying attention to people in the moment. You know, when you meet somebody in the hallway and, well, how you doing, Joe? And I heard your wife was sick. Realizing that, wait a minute, that meeting that I was going to, it'll wait just a minute. So let me pay attention to what's really important here, and that's the people. It's hard to condense 40 years of experiences into just an elevator speech. But I typically will answer people, I wished I had learned to trust my intuition earlier in my career. And I think that's just part of maturing. You have these ideas when you're the junior person in a team or group or organization of basically keeping your mouth shut and your head low and just doing a lot of listening and watching. But every once in a while, you'll have this idea of thinking, I'm not really sure that's the best way to do that. I really think this would work better. And over time and experience, you get to the point where you're willing to say those things. And then, of course, there's this sort of a stereotype about the people that are really close to retirement. They start saying what they really think and telling you what they really want to do and don't do. And sort of what's happening is they're beginning to say, man, that's really a stupid idea. Or here's something that'll work better. So over my career, I learned to trust my intuition more and more. To at the end of my career, I was a lot more comfortable saying, I have no idea why I think this, but here's what I think. I wished I had learned to do that earlier in my career. So I encourage people, particularly younger workers, to trust your intuition more. It's there for a reason. And just talk it out. You'll be around people that are experienced and they can help you decide whether it's really a good idea or just one of those fleeting moments of genius that you have that's really not worth using in the workplace. So trusting your intuition, I think, is really one of those things that I really wished I had done better. And then the other we've already talked about, and that's just realizing how important people are in that formula of any organization. And it's certainly no single leader's job nor to his credit if an organization is successful and probably if it fails. So trust the people.
Man, I could listen to Mike for hours and hours and hours and hours, because when experience comes to the table, enlightened experience, I think, is probably a better way to describe Mike Blevins, comes to the table, there's lots to share. But the thing about Mike, and get a chance to talk to him, don't miss it, is he's a teacher, not a teller. You know what I mean? He teaches. He pulls you, he invites you in to learn about yourself. And his amount of knowledge operationally and technically is, you know, beyond reproach. But what's amazing is the self-discovery he's done. The work he's done on who he is as a leader is quite remarkable. And it's kind of a cool opportunity to get to hang with him. I wish it could have been hours longer. Mike's really boiled it down for us. I mean, live in the present. There's just not better advice you could give anybody. You know, we spend most of our time either freaked out about the past or nervous about the future, and therefore we sort of miss the present, and that's just dumb, right? Trust your intuition, and I think he's right. I think that's a function of maturity. I think what happens is as you get older, you give less craps about stuff. You know, my crap giver has reduced its ability to give crap, and then finally, people matter. And that is really what Mike talks about. And the HPRCT meeting, which for some reason I couldn't call it the right thing, but you'll just have to add the T when you listen to it. That's all there is to it. Do come. I invite you to come. I bet we talk about it more. Until then, though, I hope you get what you need. That's really important to me. Learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.